darling, save the last dance for me. You can dance, you can carry on till the night is gone and it's time to go. If he asks if you're all alone, can he take you home? You gotta tell him no, 'cause don't forget taking you home, and in whose arms you're gonna be. Oh, darling, save the last dance for me. So, darling, save the last dance. Last dance for me.
This is WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Hi, I'm Jay Kornick. I'm your host for this show. It is local news and alternative views. Often, the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, or students, although sometimes I hope so. Of course, I'm here at Henry Ford Community College, and any opinions I say are my opinions. We have with us a special guest as part of our series of interviewing the challengers for the Dearborn City Council. That means that they are the ones who are not in office, the ones you've heard about, the ones you've seen the names of or seen them on TV, and maybe you have an opinion or not, but the challengers don't often get a chance to fill you in on exactly who and what they are, because they don't have that ready access to the newspaper stories and the cable TV. So joining us, as I said, in the studio, besides in the background, I have two of our WHFR staff with us today. Dennis Reimars, our news director, and Amy Powers, who is an erstwhile member of the staff. She still has to pass her staff training final exam, which I haven't checked yet. Sorry, Amy. So she's still in limbo, sort of, but she's going to be, I hope talking to both of them in the second half of the show. But without further ado, David Bozzi, welcome to WHFR Journal, David.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having us on. I think what you're doing is great, because it's very difficult in a town such as this to get exposure, and I think exposure is key for people to understand who you are and why you're running.
We talked last week to one of our staff members here, Ned Apigian, and Ned is actually a candidate for the Dearborn City Council, the Dearborn Heights City Council, let me get that correct, not to give him a campaign plug at all, but we talked to him for a number of minutes in the second half of the last show about how difficult it is to run and get your message out. There's a price tag involved if you want to do a mailing to every house in the district, and Dearborn has, 30,000 residences and so on, and a lot of the televised debates might give you, maybe upwards of 4 minutes to express yourself. So we'd like to think that... let's move that mic a little closer. There we go. We'd like to think that you have a little more time today to get your message out. So let's start. David Bozzi, tell us about your background, your sort of basic facts of your biography, where you lived and how you lived, and job, career, education. Take a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm 51 years old, and I've lived in Dearborn my entire life, besides a small stint in San Diego, which I will tell you was quite enjoyable. I am married to my wife, Sherry, who obviously is still the love of my life, and we've been married for 25 years. We have three sons. The oldest is 22, all boys. We have a 22-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 17-year-old. My educational background is I have a bachelor's in both business and psychology from the University of Michigan, and I have a master's in business administration from Wayne State University. I've worked at Ford Motor Company when it was the steel division. It was Ford Motor Steel. And I've been at Kenwall Steel and the president of Kenwall Steel the last 23 and a half years. And we opened up Kenwall Pickling about 7 years ago, and I'm also the president and chairman of that operation as well.
Now, for those that don't know, I think I know, pickling is not about pickles.
That is correct. Okay. Pickling is a process that you take the ferrous oxide. For those of you who are studying engineering or metallurgy here, mm-hmm. it's the process whereby you take ferrous oxide off the steel and make it suitable for downstream applications.
I thought... Okay, ferrous oxide is rust.
That is correct.
I learned something in school. All right. So it's an allied area, but you moved into that. So how's the steel business these days with the problem with the economy and not so many cars being produced locally?
Well, we're lucky, and I think it's because we work hard and we work smart. We're at full capacity right now and actually working overtime in all of our facilities, which are both here in Dearborn, Burns Harbor, Indiana, and Lebanon, Tennessee. We've been blessed that we saw the early downturn. We took on some government work. We picked up some incremental automotive work, and between the two of those now, as automotive has picked up some and the government work is still pretty strong, we have zero individuals in our plant on layoff right now. So
that's wonderful. That's a wonderful story. And shipping overseas at all? I think Severstal is, and some other U.S. Steel manufacturers. It wasn't that way for a while. In some cases, I think people were getting their steel from Japan or something all the way across the ocean. But is there some possibility for that, or you've got plenty of places to sell steel in the U.S.?
Well, as a finished product, and because they're not bulk moves like with the steel mills that you're talking about.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We ship into Mexico, and we have a relationship with a company called Acero Primo in San Luis Raposo, where we do some work with some of the companies that have moved into Mexico and are of North American origin, and we ship into Canada. Mm-hmm. But except for some trials or some small pieces, there's a lack of economic sense for to ship small quantities into Europe or Asia.
Okay. Okay. Well, it is nice that whenever we hear about a business that is succeeding, successful, and even helping our economy, and besides keeping people at work. So, congratulations on being able to pull that one off. So we know about your education, MBA, and that's quite appropriate since you're running a business and seemingly successfully, from what you said. Why did you decide to run for city council? It's a part-time job. After all, and maybe more headaches than what you might expect even now.
Well, I've had that question asked to me about 1,000 times, and I'll say the same answer that I tell everyone. You know, I was born here, and my father worked for the city of Dearborn. My mother worked for the school boards. I think somewhere along the way, either through osmosis or over the years, I was ingrained with the city of Dearborn in my blood, and I love the city. I see things that I think that I can help be a positive. A positive position person to move the city forward. I think right now I have a philosophy, and it's the same business philosophy, is either you're moving forward or you're treading water. And when you're treading water, you're drowning, albeit slowly. Mm. And I think right now the city is treading water.
Mm. Could you be more specific? Obviously, the revenues coming in from the usual tax base is has declined, number one, because of property values going down, and therefore the property people that own the property are not paying as much in taxes. I don't think we've had a big movement of people out of Dearborn. If anything, we have more population than before. But certainly there's less money available. So would that be one of your issues, certainly, to try to find a way to make do with less?
Well, we have one of the things I think you have to do. I'll step back before I answer that. If you look around, we have a lot of vacant buildings, both on the business side and on the residential side. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look around, what you see is what has been the trait here is that I think the lack of understanding that is a city today, you're competing for both business dollars and consumer dollars, and those consumer dollars are in the form of residency. And so when you put high escrows on foreclosures or HUD homes, and other cities such as Dearborn Heights, Allen Park, Melvindale, Livonia, surrounding communities don't have those same restrictions, you make the possible purchaser or the homeowner leave and go to another direction, because people will take the path of least resistance. And so when you bring them in, and even though they would like to come here, if you're asking them to put an escrow balance in place and they're coming in to buy a $50,000 foreclosed home, and you want a $10,000 or $12,000 escrow balance, even if you want it bonded or whatever it may be, the process is so penal that you take people and they say, you know, I can go to Livonia, I can go to Dearborn Heights, I don't have to go through all this. And so you lose that consumer. And in today's environment, with the economy as it is in the state of Michigan, you can't afford to lose that consumer.
Well, I know Dearborn has always had a reputation as being tough on building codes. At least the building code, the rules were always quite strict. And in some cases, you know, not recognizing new technology that should be adopted, and it's just as safe and just as healthy. But now with the building department, building and safety sort of split up, and the jobs are separated, maybe there's hope for change there. But you really feel that our rules about people moving in, is this residential as well as business, are much more restrictive than other surrounding cities?
Well, I don't believe it. They are. I mean, you know, I've talked to other cities, and Dearborn is starting to modify some of those. They were extremely penal 6 months ago, and whether you can speak to any of the realtors, or, you know, I recently was talking to the Board of Realtors, and this struck a chord with them as I was discussing, not because they're looking for a sale, you know, but obviously because in order to, you talk about home values, the way you stop home values from declining is to at least stop the amount of foreclosures that are vacant. Mm-hmm. And what we don't want to have happen in the city of Dearborn is, look, your goal always should be to have owner-occupied homes, right? Rentals are part of a community, but owner-occupied homes, people talk about neighborhoods, and everyone wants to say, hey, I love neighborhoods, I love police, I love fire, I love all the good things, and we all do, all right? All of those are a cost, but neighborhood stabilization starts with good neighbors. Mm-hmm. Good neighbors start with people that have a dedicated piece of their own personality, as well as for lack of a better word, skin in the game. Mm-hmm. They're owners. They have that piece of property. They're going to take better care of it because they're an owner. You know, and as a person who's had rentals before and have had people in rentals, and some are good renters and some are bad renters. And it doesn't, you know, there are great renters that take care of their property as if they own it, and there are bad renters. But people that own homes have a tendency to take better care of their property and be more engaged in the neighborhood, more engaged in the PTA, and more engaged in the neighborhood process.
There was several stories, in fact, in the current issue of Money Magazine that focus on Detroit and home sales in this general area. It seems that perhaps specifically in Detroit, it's something like 80% of the homes that were sold last year were homes that were foreclosed upon, you know, and that their average price was around $7,000 or $8,000. That's it. I mean, now I don't know what neighborhoods those were in, but that was the average for all of Detroit, and that's pretty awful. Now the city can't do anything directly, or can they? Do you feel they could with banks? Could they talk to them at least? I mean, in terms of foreclosures, I often think, not being part of the banking system, that it's really bad business for a bank to think about, well, we'll foreclose, we'll kick them out, and we'll get somebody in quick. They're gonna want to buy for less, and they may not find anyone. In my neighborhood in East Dearborn, we've got 8 to 10 homes within a block or two of me that are up for sale, and they've been up for sale for a year and a half or more. Now, maybe people are just waiting for something near what they owe rather than just give up and lose money. But it's do you think it's anything more than just maybe trying to either speed up the process or change some of the building regulations that might be unnecessarily strict?
Well, it's funny. This morning I was talking to Bob Curran, and Bob Curran is obviously a large realtor in the city at Curran and Johnson on Century 21. And he was talking about years ago when he was a young man, 24 years old, and moved into the city and actually bought a house. You know, this isn't the first foreclosure phase that we've ever gone through. And you know, back in the mid-70s, you know, the recession of the 74 through, you know, 75 recession was pretty tough. He had come out of University of Michigan, came back here, moved here, and at that time the city worked with him, and they had a C of, he would come in, he would get a temporary C of O, he'd move in the house, and he'd have a list of things he would have to do, and every 3 months he would report back to the city on what he'd accomplished. They wouldn't let him move in if there were safety violations, obviously, but if there were issues such as, you know, brick point tucking, or you know, something that needed to be done in terms of painting or windows, he had a process of him going through there, and little by little, and really, he said it took him 18 months to go through the entire process, and every 3 months he went to the city. And I think, you know, that cooperative relationship is what you have to have today. Because if you don't, you'll end up with investors buying foreclosures. That's what's really going on in Detroit. You get investors buying foreclosures and then going to rentals, and you end up with a higher rental population. And, you know, you can't do anything about that because from a legality stance, you can't. But from a pro-business stance and from a pro home ownership stamps, we need to change, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm hoping that if I get elected, I can accomplish this whole change of mental philosophy that, you know, you're a civil servant, you're a city servant. That's what a council person is. You're there to serve the public. You know, you're there to, you're not there to listen. You're there to listen and help. We forget the second part.
You think it was a good move in that direction, or you think it'd be better to work out? I mean, for years, Mayor Michael Guido, rest in peace, would in almost every one of his State of the City addresses say, we're going to make some significant changes in the building and safety department. And nothing ever happened. I mean, this is even in his last time, we got some changes. Nothing ever happened. Now at least we've split them apart. I think we've changed maybe some people that are supervising different things. They have a more, let's say, a narrow focus for each one of those parts. Do you think that was a good step?
Yeah, I think so. I think splitting people, you know, going into a commercial and a residential group and training people to manage each of those areas is the first step. Mm-hmm. But the secondary step is really a policy from a higher up, which really just basically says, how are we going to compete? If you're coming into town, how do we compete to make you want to come to Dearborn and make it as easy as possible for you to come here? We can't change federal law. We can't change, you know, we can't change what, you know, credit scores are. But for those that have the ability to come in, we can make it easier for them to come in, and that's what we need to do.
Just sum this up then on this point too. General Motors, big example, not and certainly different, but they say that because they weren't able to change their corporate culture, which, you know, they believed in certain types of cars and made certain ways, and they weren't able to find job economies or throw a lot of money into like the Saturn project, which they sort of gave up on and is now dead. That changing the sort of corporate culture of the building and safety area is going to be pretty, even much smaller number of people here, but it looks like it's been a real difficult challenge, even for Mayor Guido when he was office, to try to make any significant changes there. And I saw a letter to the editor of one of the local papers in the last week or so. They say, well, yeah, they split it up, but they still got the same people in charge. and I, although I don't think it's fair that they talk about There's still got a lot of corruption there because the FBI has come in and they have found people and they've investigated and they've in process of prosecuting people. So I don't know about other rumors of massive corruption or payoffs or bribes, but there was some going on apparently. So you think there's that a review, console level review of building and safety regulations in their several departments and suggestions for improvement are one of the top things on your list?
Absolutely. And you know, an ordinance comes from the city council. I mean, that's the area that you have control mm-hmm. over. So it's time to sit down and look at what ordinances make sense and put them in place and make sure that they're consumer friendly.
Okay. Let's talk about where you stand or how you see some of these old issues. The development questions of East Dearborn and West Dearborn, the businesses in there, if you can take maybe 30 seconds to a minute. What about, let's start with East Dearborn development. Is it going the way you'd like? Always more to be done with development, I guess, but...
Well, you have to wait to see what's going to happen with this Redeco project. I mean, and once that gets finished in Montgomery Wards, you have to see the impact, you know, of how that moves forward along Michigan Avenue. Because if you look at East Dearborn, it's almost like a tale of distinct areas in East Dearborn, whereas Warren Avenue appears to be thriving. And, you know, there's very few vacancies along that area. Michigan Avenue, if you look from Greenfield to Wyoming, there's a significant amount of vacancies yeah. that still exist. So we have a ways to go, and I think that we have to be smart about what we're putting in those vacant stores.
He mentioned it quickly. Redeco is the developer, I guess, and it's going to be a health center called Dearborn Town Center, almost like a shopping center for your health or something. I don't know. It's just stupid to call it Dearborn Town Center and then have our major shopping center be called Fairlane Town Center. It's not a town center. First of all, it's not in the center. It's in the east side, but crazy. But it's that large health center that's going to be occupied or run by Oakwood Hospital Network, and also they're moving in the Midwest Medical from Schaefer Road, which is another vacant building to come as soon as they move down. So there's ways to go there. I can't understand, really, unless it's a cultural thing, positive cultural thing, how Warren Road, you know, around Schaefer and east of Schaefer has fantastic development, and it's really nice. A lot of shops, a lot of stores, very healthy, and Michigan Avenue hasn't been able to kick in there. So I don't know if we need more condos or more, you know, residences for people, and then other things will come. I'm not sure. West Dearborn, let's go there quickly. Of course, we've got a $17 million lawsuit against Burton Katzman. And I got my fingers crossed, and I bet a lot of people in the city that we're going to even get a settlement out of court for $12 million or something. What would you do with that money towards West Dearborn development, or would you keep some for the general fund, and where do you stand on the paid parking issue?
Well, I think, you know, paid parking today is a major issue because it's the final nail in the coffin for a lot of businesses that have suffered from the economic malaise of, you know, Ford cutting back and less people coming into the city to work and spend money, as well as less people going out to eat, as the economy has struck a chord across the nation with people going out there. So, you know, when you look at West Dearborn's development, we have two decks. We have to pay for them some way. If we're able to get this money, my preference would be to, as quickly as possible, start to expire, or at least use some of that money to expire some of the debt. We're using fund balance money to pay for the decks anyway, because the amount of revenue being generated by paid parking isn't anywhere near the amount to pay off the interest and the payments on the decks themselves. So, you know, the project was let to the wrong developer early when it was let to Dominic Maltese. You know, timing is everything in terms sometimes in development. The businesses that came in during a tough environmental. You still have problems with ingress and egress coming off Michigan Avenue there into that little area where all those stores, at one time there were 10, 9 of them have left. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I think part of it is getting them in and making it convenient. And I think right now, you know, my proposal would be at least Thursday through Sunday, let's eliminate paid parking in the short term while we review and try to salvage some of these businesses and hope they can make it. Because what we don't need is more vacant buildings and less tax dollars.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you think there should be a hotel between those two paid parking towers? That was the original plan. But don't we have enough sort of hotels in the West Dearborn area, or can you never have enough?
Well, I'm not for another hotel in that region right there. I think that, you know, you've got the Hyatt that's struggling, as we all know, and, you know, is close to the financial brink in this region here in Dearborn. The vacancy rates are high in all the hotels. We have another new hotel being built, a Holiday Inn Express right on the other side of Telegraph on right. Michigan Avenue going in. It appears to me that there are things that we can do. We just don't need to plop something in just to have something. I think that's part of our problem on Michigan Avenue.
I'm trying to remember, next to Andiamo's in West Dearborn, there was a motel there. Has someone bought that, or is that still in limbo? I can't remember. I don't know if you know, and you don't have to know at this point. But
all I know about that, and I don't know all the detail, is that, you know, that was going back and forth for a while. They were trying to do is get rid of that and take that land over and build housing for U of M Dearborn, for student housing.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that was the land.
And I think the city may be now in a position where they have taken that property over. And I think that, you know, like in anything, you have to just kind of wait. In this tepid economic, and I'll say tepid in a nice way, economic climate that we have here, it's probably worse than tepid. I think that you have to kind of wait.
Let's jump to some new ideas and see where you stand on those. Intermodal train station, that's a relocated train station for greater capacity and interconnection, high-speed rail maybe if they can afford the extra money. I think it's going to be $30 million with the high-speed option. Does that seem appropriate? That would be, again, located, not in the middle of West Dearborn, but on the sort of the east side of West Dearborn there. I think that would be good for the area.
Well, I think it would be great for the area. I think it would draw a lot of people in. I think you would hope to feed off of some of that for some of your other traffic in bars, restaurants, other areas that go on and could feed off that intermodal. I think it would help the Greenfield Village, and it would help the Henry Ford Museum as well.
Mm-hmm. Fairlane Town Center, Conference Center, you think that's a good idea? That, again, money being raised from a variety of places for both of these projects, but...
Well, I think that, you know, I think that, again, it would help the region. I think we just have to make sure that the demand is there. I think there's a significant demand for a mid-sized conference center for easy access near hotels, and it would kind of fit that entire bill, and it probably even would help Fairlane Town Center, which is, again, has gone through some issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Any new ideas that you'd like to suggest? For example, over the last couple of years, a couple of ideas came up that haven't moved ahead, and maybe there's good reasons, but one that I liked as a computer user was the city actually putting out, I think it would only be like $2 million, but I know $2 million is still $2 million, not pocket change, for Wi-Fi, that is wireless connections to the internet for everybody in the city, not just so even the businesses wouldn't have to put out their own money, because it'll get into the businesses, it'll get into the homes. City might lose some revenue, I guess, from the cable company because people would cut back on their internet connection, and there's always a kickback from those local cable franchises. Let me just mention a couple of these and jump in wherever you want to. Even Mayor O'Reilly, though, mentioned about a year ago, if the money was there, or some of the federal money perhaps, putting it into building wind turbines along the Rouge. I don't know how many, but I think it was at least three or four that would generate electricity directly for Dearborn, and maybe even make a profit at times to sending it into the grid for the area. That hasn't gone ahead. You mentioned one of my special ideas I always like is riding bicycles more easily throughout the city. And we are split into sort of east and west side. But in between, there's only like one sidewalk. Well, there's not even a sidewalk now. It's closed off because of the Michigan Avenue construction. We have no bike paths, no lanes, 3 feet or so marked on the right side. Anybody wants to use a bicycle directly for commuting. You know, not for recreation, meandering through the woods or whatever, but actually getting someplace, can't do that. And by the way, if they use that motel in West Dearborn for the U of MD students, they don't even have a sidewalk. that they can walk from there. I mean, there's, I mean, yeah, they can eventually go to Andiamo's, and then they have to meander down and up and over, and it's kind of steep on that path too. I've seen some elderly folks, they can't even get up that path in the woods there at one point. So we, in fact, even the college president, Dr. Ming, she said, well, you know, we're redoing the parking lots. We're going to get some bike racks in too, you know. So people, and I said, how are they going to get here? You know, there's no sidewalks. There's not even a bike path, and you can get killed trying to ride next to Fairlane Town Center in during rush hour times or peak times. Any crazy ideas like that that you'd like to support? I don't think they're crazy. They're just unusual. And
well, I don't think they're crazy. I think each of those, in today's environment, you know, you have federal dollars that are available for things that are that appear to be environmentally friendly. So I think bike paths, if you can get federal dollars for bike paths, it would be a great idea. If you can get bike paths to major areas, whether it be the universities, whether it be Ford, where you're, whether it be over near Oakwood, where you have a lot of workers, people then who are living in the area could commute by bike. And especially during the weather's nice from May till, you know, this time of year, where biking is essential. But I will tell you, trying to bike on Michigan Avenue and cut across there is a very dangerous way to get to work.
I've done it, but I've got my side routes and back alleys and so on. Well, actually, I cross at the police department because I figure if I get run down there, the cops are ready to call the ambulance quick and take the body away. But there is a stoplight there down by the Dearborn Police Department. But it's Fairlane is hilarious. I don't know if the city can ever set any guidelines. I mean, the state probably the ones, or the county doing Michigan Avenue reconstruction, right?
That is correct. But,
you know,
yearly.
Why can't they accommodate these sorts of things? I mean, it would only help the local areas to make that other. And biking is also healthy too. Even if it's a little cold out, at least you're generating your own internal heat, you know, when you're pedaling along as fast as you can. So, I mean, just many other communities have these things, and I think we have to pattern ourselves. For example, electricity generation. Apparently, Wyandotte has a wind turbine that the city owns, operates, kicks in when they need it.
You know? Well, that, you know, that area between, you know, when you go from Michigan Avenue to Rotunda, that lower area there would be a perfect area to put wind turbines in.
That's
there.
Where they're thinking.
Especially the newer ones that, you know, are a capsule and they generate and they spin, and they move easier and they collect more energy than the old wind turbine design.
Yeah, our energy tech people right on campus, they'll be glad to give you the specs needed anytime you want to talk to them. We have a new certificate and degree program in alternative energy engineering. So, yeah, very exciting. We're going to let you, we're coming to the end of our half hour that we give every candidate. So we're going to give you the big 2 minutes now, which may be as much as you get in some of the other debates, to sum up who you are. We've been talking the last half hour with David Bozzi, who is running for Dearborn City Council. Your consideration, your full consideration, we hope you'll give him, as well as all the other candidates, and we hope that you'll spend as much time as possible to find out about the candidates before you vote on November 3rd. Even if you have to use an absentee ballot, you can wait until, I think, the Friday before you take it in, or you can walk into the city clerk's office directly, even on Monday before the election, and just do the ballot right there. It's absentee ballot, but you can do it in the office there at City Hall. Okay, so again, summarize why people should vote for David Bozzi.
Well, I at every communication that we've had with all the candidates, you know, I basically say the same thing. You have to decide who you want to vote for and why you'd want to vote for him. And I think the reason that, you know, I would be a successful city candidate, council candidate for you is, you know, I'm a high energy person. I've been very successful, whether it was as the chairman of the Charter Commission, you know, getting the charter passed in 2 years for the city, whether it was sitting on the Zoning Board of Appeals for 5 years and basically being instrumental in moving Warren Avenue and Schaefer forward with development after development throughout the city that have really highlighted the success of those entrepreneurs, and you see it today by their businesses thriving. That, you know, the decisions that I make are independent. There's a reason that I've been supported by the mayor, endorsed by the mayor, endorsed by police, endorsed by fire, endorsed by Democratic Club, even though I'm an independent, endorsed by AIPAC, endorsed by Sir Michael Berry, and the list goes on. So it's because of the energy that I provide. And I think that if you look at the council today, the one thing that you can see is that there seems to be a lack of energy. There seems to be a lack of intuitiveness across
across the board. And, you know, my goal is to bring energy in. My goal is to bring new ideas in. My goal is for the city to move forward. You know, we have to move forward. We can't stay where we are. We're competing with other regions, and Dearborn has been a great community to be in. And in order to be great going forward, we have to think forward thinking. And I think that that's the difference when you look at someone like myself versus some of the other candidates. You know, it isn't because I'm a business person that you should vote for me, because the city's not a business. But it's because of the way I think. It's because of the way I reason. It's because of my thought process that you should want to vote for me. I've been successful, whether it was coaching hockey for 18 years, both here in the city or AAA, and really, you know, the only 1 year I coached here in the city at Dearborn Unified, we took it all the way to the state finals and lost in the championship game. And, you know, I'm a driven person, and, you know, my theory is, you know, I tell people, don't tell me how you're not going to do it. Come back to tell me how we can get it done and what it's going to take to do that.
And last but not least, how can people find out more about David Bozzi's run for the Dearborn City Council? You mentioned before, I've got it right in front of me here, facebook.com/David Bozzi, that's B-A-Z-Z-Y.
That's right, and also committee to elect David Bozzi at Facebook, and I'll give you my cell phone number. You can always get me on my cell, 313-218-6196, and if I get elected, that cell phone won't change.
6196?
6196.
Got it. Okay. We'll mention again before the end of the hour. David Bozzi, thank you so much for coming in and expressing your views. We wish your campaign great success at getting the message out to what you stand for and who you are so that people can make a great decision on November 3rd. So thanks for being on the Journal today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more local news and alternative views here in just a minute after Jim Hightower tells us his opinion on an important issue of the day.
Experts tell us that America's painful recession is, quote, probably over. That's swell, but how's your personal economy going? If you're not sure, check your underwear. Mintel, an economic research firm, considers sales of men's undies to be a bellwether of the economy's ups and downs. When men are short on cash, claims Mintel, they don't buy new shorts as frequently. The firm expects men's drawers to drop 2.3% this year. However, you can bet that one small group of men skew the underwear indicator way upwards. There are five CEOs who've been named the, quote, highest paid worst performers of 2008. Despite doing a poor job, these executives can still afford to strap on a new pair of silk shorts every day. The Corporate Library, a watchdog group, analyzed the pay of 2,000 top executives to call out these winners. Abercrombie & Fitch, BJ Services, Comcast Corporation, International Paper, and Neighbor Industries. Check Abercrombie's Michael Jeffries, for example. Despite a stock price that lagged behind other clothing retailers during the past 5 years, Jeffries has a contract that guarantees his pay will always be higher than the compensation earned by 75% of his rivals. Last year, therefore, he pocketed $72 million in pay, including a $6 million stay bonus to keep him from leaving the company. Come on, why would he ever leave such a sweet deal as that? Sweetest of all, though, is the deal that Eugene Eisenberg gets from Neighbors Industries, an oil drilling company. He's paid not on performance, but on a percentage of the corporation's cash flow. Thus, while Neighbor's stock price fell 51% last year, Eisenberg got $79 million in pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about executive compensation excess, contact faireconomy.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Need to know? WHFR's Tuesday Talk, noon to 2 p.m., features two unique hours of information you can't get from any other Detroit radio station. Need to know about science? Hour 1 from noon to 1 p.m., we're proud to present what we believe to be the best weekly radio science show. Are We Alone? Science Radio for Thinking Species, produced by the SETI Institute and hosted by nationally noted scientist Seth Shostak. Need to know about anything else? Hour 2, 1 to 2 p.m., the WHFR Forum, a wide range of program topics locally selected and, whenever possible, locally produced and hosted, from UFOs to metaphysics to intellectual history, from ecology to health. So check out Tuesday Talk each week, noon to 2 p.m. Science Radio is also available on the internet from SETI.org/radio. For the WHFR forum shows at any time, go to our own website, WHFR.fm, and click on forum. Your need to know, our mission. This is the WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal. Why is it new? Because it's not the same as last week. Duh. If you do want to listen again at any time, let's say to any of our previous shows that feature the challengers for the Dearborn City Council race, in the Dearborn City Council race, you can go to our website, whfr.fm, click on the journal button, and then pick a date. Okay, all Fridays, of course, and each week after 2 p.m. on Friday, a new MP3 file is there for the whole show. And some people say, well, you know, I just want to hear the news. I don't want to hear the console candidate. Well, shame on you, but you can fast forward, too. The player that pops up on your computer screen, you can just click and drag that. A lot of people say, oh, there's all that big band music at the start. Yeah, because we start a minute early there just so we don't miss any important stuff on our show in case we start early, although we don't usually. So just remember, you can, you know, when it starts playing, you can go fast forward past that 1 minute of big band music if you want to, or anywhere you want to go there. So tell your friends, tell your family. The WHFR Journal is available anytime, day or night, from our website, whfr.fm. Well, Jim Hightower had one commentary there. Sometimes I've been featuring two. We cover on this show, we have covered the ins and outs of healthcare reform and the ideas that a lot of people aren't either accepting or voting down, such as the single payer option, the public option. And this is Jim Hightower's commentary that was just out, but he didn't have his audio version. He does this a lot better. But as of Monday of this week, this is what he said. And we still don't have, of course, a healthcare bill. Everybody talks about the Senate, and this is Jim Towers' comment about Senator Baucus in our U.S. Senate in Washington D.C. Until the House of Representatives gets into it and they negotiate, we don't know what's going to happen. It might be the end of the year. But I have to read this. America's shouting match over health care reform has turned completely goofy, according to Jim Hightower. And he's not talking about confused seniors at teabag rallies getting red-faced with anger after being told by the right-wing scare machine that government is trying to take over Medicare. No, I'm talking about our United States senators. Take Max Baucus. Please. Joke there, of course. He is the lightweight Montana Democrat to whom President Obama entrusted the heavy job of shepherding health care reform through the upper chamber. It was like asking Tweety Bird to lift a bowling ball. Baucus, backed by unanimous and enthusiastic support from every Republican on his committee, remember he's a Democrat, supposedly, has merrily jettisoned reform after reform that the industry opposed. That the industry, healthcare industry, the HMOs, the hospitals, as well as big pharma, as they're called, the drug companies, going on. For example, an amendment to require drug price discounts for low-income seniors with multiple chronic illnesses. That proposal was killed. Thank you, Max. The proposal to include a not-for-profit public insurance option to increase competition, provide consumer choice, and keep insurance companies honest. Gone. Why? Baucus said his goal was to produce a bill that could win the industry support and get the 60 votes needed to overcome a Republican filibuster. That's it? That's his goal? Quizzes Jim Hightower. If the meek ever inherit the earth, Baucus will be a land baron. Why isn't it in his goal to produce the best health care there is for all the American people? Why has he let Republicans, who were voted out of office last year in part because of their failure to deal with people's health care needs, control the terms of the debate and the content of the Democrats' bill? Why doesn't he take a couple of testosterone shots and reach out to the 65% of Americans, including 47% of Republicans and 63% of doctors, who support the public insurance option? Why doesn't he rally them to kick the selfish health insurance lobbyists right in the butt and do what needs to be done for America? It's his question. He feels, of course, as a progressive, that the power is with the people, and so we encourage all of you here from the Journal, research the facts, read a book or two if you got the time, send an email, call your local elected representatives. And in this area, it'd be John Dingell or whoever that representative is on the... Oh, John Conyers. They're the two representatives from the Dearborn area itself. And, of course, the senators from Michigan who are still dealing with the issue, and that's Levin and Stabenow. Thank you. I've sort of a quiz here. I was looking over to my crack WHFR news team, and they got dumbfounded too.
No,
but
we get it.
Yeah, sure. I didn't have your mic on, so go ahead, Dennis. Say you
Stabenow.
Thank you.
You're
see,
welcome.
He knew that. Okay. Well, I want to look at a couple of the issues from the Dearborn Times Herald and the Press and Guide from last week. The big issue that does kind of affect the Press and Guide, but it seems politically based, and I'd call it political dirt, in fact. Doug Thomas, who is an incumbent on the Dearborn City Council, his residency has been questioned. He has homestead tax exemptions in both Florida and Dearborn, and can you do that? Can you get that tax exemption on both places? You only can live one place. You have to have one primary residence.
Only if you're separated, right?
Yeah, and he's not. He's still currently married. That's, yeah, Dennis read the story. It's very good, Dennis.
Yeah, I needed help with the big words, but
I know.
Thank you.
I know. Well, I thought, oh, he's being challenged, and I was thinking this through, by the person who just missed out on getting into the top 14 for the city council race, and it was not the next person down, so it really wouldn't matter if this issue had been worked out months ago. It's really too late now. It's too late now for, like, Thomas, you know, might, and I doubt it, but he might be X'd off the ballot or whatever the result is of the election. If it takes a couple months to adjudicate this, they may say, well, his votes aren't going to be counted or something, or not going to be, if it's proven that he does not have primary residency here, or he has mistakenly or on purpose stated that he has double residency, which you can't have. You're going to have dual citizenship, I think, in two different countries in certain circumstances, but you can't have two primary residences. So it might disqualify him. But again, it's too late to take his name off and put the next person on the list in there. And I forget who that is. You don't happen to remember, Dennis, the next person. It's just too late because you can't do that. Well, it's Nancy Siwik. That's Siwik. She's the one that brought this up.
She did, yes.
At the city council.
Did you read the the response when she initially brought this to other city council members?
No, tell us.
Apathy. Complete. Well, one of, and my favorite response, and again, she did not label a comment with an individual.
Right.
But she was kind of brought in. She said that it ranged from, I spoke with a couple of council people, and I was given all different answers from, he's a friend, I can't do that, to, I don't think he's going to win anyway, what difference does it make? And I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's from the Times Herald.
Well, number one, it's, as I said, it's political dirt. It's a time to, cast aspersions widely at anybody that you don't think should get elected in November. And the only, well, we have two races in Dearborn, and we have two millage proposals. But the two races, of course, mayor, and it's only Mayor O'Reilly, and is it David J. Pruss or Pruss?
Pruss.
Pruss, okay. They had a debate recently. Did anybody here catch that? I didn't catch it. I think it's on cable now, so we suggest that you watch either WOW or Comcast, find out when they're going to be rerunning that on the city channel. League of Women Voters sponsored that. But it's the Dearborn City Council is the big thing. And so one approach is to throw dirt at anybody you think might be competitive. And Thomas has the name. He's an incumbent. If he gets soiled by dirt, true or not, then there might be a chance for one of the challengers that we talked to be there, or the other incumbents can be more secure because they might give them his vote. So what we wanted to state here is, even though it's in the headlines of the paper, people may talk about this, it has not been proven, resolved, so you really shouldn't consider it until legally it's worked out. If you want to vote for Doug Thomas on November 3rd, I don't think this will be resolved. I don't think, you know, something may happen afterwards, but I don't think there'll be anything, as you mentioned, Dennis, about the apathy on the part of the other city council people. I don't think they're going to do anything this late to it, but there might be consequences later. And it could have been just, you know, it's several of our council members have made problems in filing their taxes. Okay, Bob Abrahams had a big problem, didn't pay property taxes for 2 years, $70,000 worth that he owed on extra properties that he was trying to sell in West Dearborn, condos that weren't selling. So he didn't pay the taxes. Oh, I can't sell them, so I'm not going to pay the taxes. Gee whiz. But he finally did the right thing when the issue came up at the council, and he paid those taxes. But 2 years? Sharon Domage, she did not get in the election last time around for the Dearborn Board of Ed because she misunderstood, according to the city clerk anyway, deadlines required for refiling. Okay, and she says, well, they misled her. They gave her the wrong information. She was out of town at the time. But she had some tax issues too, which she has resolved now. And she claims it was just, you know, she forgot or whatever. I don't know. Do you want anyone on the city council at all who can't get, you know, their taxes straight or their property? I mean, not clear about the law or deadlines. It's true. Life is extremely complicated, and we might have a lot of things going on. I'm trying to give both multiple sides here.
Right.
There's reasons why all of us might forget a date or miss a deadline because of so many rules and requirements in our society. Still, you want to vote for somebody for council if that's the case? Now, in Thomas's case, these things haven't been proven, okay, and they haven't been thoroughly worked out. There is a charge there, but I don't think that you should vote based on charges alone and not vote for someone because of a charge. If it hasn't been proven, hey, this is America. I thought we have to be proven guilty of something. Otherwise, we're innocent. Okay, so keep that in mind. That's my opinion here. Moving on, I want to talk about the schools. Is that okay?
Oh, please.
Dennis, you're in school here. And so is Amy, too. So, but this is about our local schools. As you know, the state of Michigan, the budget situation, there was an extension of last year's budget, which ended in July 1st, now supposedly to the end of October.
Right.
And I just think it's really interesting if the final deadline is Halloween to get the 2009-2010 budget in place by our state legislatures, that's going to be really scary to me. Every pun intended.
Yes.
I mean, what are the legislators going to dress up in costumes for that last session? Because you know they're not going to decide this until October 31st.
And that's a Saturday.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And they don't usually even work Fridays up there. So, I mean, seriously, folks, it's a four-day week for our representatives in Lansing. That seems like they should only be paid for part-time, but oh well, they come back to the communities and they find out how we're really thinking on those other 3 days a week, I guess. Nonetheless, my point is...
That was sarcasm.
Yes, it was. Thank you. We have to say that because the tone of voice doesn't always come across the radio.
That's your face.
And that's why... And I know comedians should never tell people when to laugh, but it's important on radio to know when we're telling a joke, folks, especially here at the Journal, because... We don't want to upset anyone, certainly. No. Don't get your lawyers in a tizzy here. The school, so what happened to the school? The school issue has been pretty much made definite. They thought they were going to get a $218 cut in per pupil funding. That would have been disastrous. However, funding was slashed by $165 a student this year. Okay, so it wasn't as bad as they thought. That's the good news. But they still have got to cut the budget.
It's
but they,
still substantial.
They,
sure.
They sort of planned to cut by 218 anyway. They had some ideas worked out. So that's the bad news, though, about it, is that they're still going to have to cut. They're still going to have reduced services and poor education for our students. All righty. Now he goes from the local to the national. In the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof, who's one of their editorial writers, has a comment here, and I'm going to try to sneak this in this hour, about reforming education. What's most important? What's the most important priorities in our society in terms of the money that we spend I think it's good schools. And here's Nicholas Kristof's ideas about that. Good schools constitute a far more potent weapon against poverty than welfare, food stamps, or housing subsidies. Again, a weapon against poverty. Yet, cowed by teachers' unions, Democrats have too often resisted reform and stood by as generations of disadvantaged children have been cemented into an underclass. President Obama and his education secretary, Arne Duncan, are trying to change that, and one test for the Democrats will be whether they embrace reforms that unions are already sniping at. And I don't think that's our local unions, folks, by the way. But anyway, it's difficult to improve failing schools, he goes on to say, when you can't create alternatives such as charter schools and can't remove inept or abusive teachers. In New York City, unions ordinarily prevent teachers from being dismissed for incompetence. So the schools must pay failed teachers their full salaries to sit year after year doing nothing in centers called rubber rooms. That's a technical term. I thought that was only in mental hospitals, but they put the teachers in rubber rooms when they're incompetent, but they can't fire them. I'm glad we're not New York. A devastating article in the New Yorker magazine by Stephen Brill examined how the city tried to dismiss a fifth-grade teacher for failing to correct student work, follow the curriculum, manage her class, or even fill out report cards. An independent observer approved by the union confirmed the allegations and declared the teacher incompetent. The school system's lawyer put it best. These children were abused in stealth. Stealth. Unquote. The effort to remove the teacher is expected to cost about $400,000, legal fees, and the outcome is uncertain. Los Angeles, jumping down here, a Los Angeles Times article this year recounted how a teacher rebuked an eighth grader who had been hospitalized for slashing her wrist in a suicide attempt. It's Los Angeles for you, folks. Quote, carve deeper next time, the teacher advised.
Really?
Yep, that's a direct quote. He was said to have added, quote, you can't even kill yourself. You know, effectively.
That's
unquote.
Just that negative motivation.
That's the teacher.
That works.
Yeah, sure. Well, he must have had a really bad day.
I guess.
A review board blocked the termination of that teacher, though.
Really?
Of course, there are many other obstacles to learning, lack of safety, troubled homes, and uninterested parents. But there's mounting evidence that even in such failing schools, the individual teacher makes a vast difference. He concludes, there are no silver bullets, but researchers are gaining a better sense of what works in education for disadvantaged children. Number one, intensive preschool. Number two, charter schools with long hours. Well, I can think of longer hours in public schools, too, folks. I'm not a total believer in charter schools, if anybody asks. I think they've been proven not necessarily to do a better job. Yes, in some cases they have, some cases they haven't. And, you know, the new thing, the first year in business with new teachers and new inspiration and the kids in a new setting, yeah, maybe. You know, they talk about New Orleans. Oh, New Orleans is a great success with charter schools. Yeah, all the disadvantaged have already moved out. They couldn't move back because their poor people housing is all destroyed and nobody rebuilt it. So what they got left in New Orleans, which is only left 30% of the population, is kids who are coming from well-to-do families and pretty good achievers already. So, of course, the charter schools are going to do better. But again, it's a new situation, new environment, and teachers they haven't seen before just changes the subject, as they say. You know, it's a fresh start, it seems. And I think charter schools have, in the first couple of years, are bound to do a little better because of those environmental reasons. And so I'm not a supporter of charter schools anyway. But nonetheless, he goes on there. I really can't agree more that education is the salvation for us, short term, long term, and all we're doing is cutting. There shouldn't even be those $165 cuts. Shame on you, state of Michigan legislature. You know, if anything should not be cut, that would most affect the future and even to get people out of poverty here in the area at schools. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. Dennis, I'm going to give you a big time 1 or 2 minutes to talk about your new news show here on WHFR as part of the forum and the Tuesday talk hours. Tell us about HFCC Campus Connection.
It's HFCC Campus Connection. It debuted this past Tuesday and will, as of right now, be the second Tuesday of each month. Mm-hmm. My co-host
next episode, November 10th.
November 10th. My co-host is Lindsay. She's just a dynamic young lady with just a lot of. She has an idea of what's going on campus, and that's the whole point of the show. It's the news that we think people want to know that in relationship to the surrounding communities. So it comes from the campus, but it's not necessarily things that are directed only at students.
Right. And you don't have to be. In fact, the whole idea is the audience, we think, well, of WHFR-FM anyway, a majority of the people listening to us right now are not students here on campus.
Right.
We have about 18,000 students on campus, but surprisingly, a lot of them don't get to the Student Center to even see our facilities and realize we're on the air. So we're trying to let the community know. It's really the campus, the name of the show, the Campus Connection, the connection with the college, how we're connected with the community, and how many ways, other than coming here and taking classes, they can benefit from our situation. And I just want to put and Dennis and Lindsay, first of all, they did a fantastic job with the first show. You can listen to that as a podcast, our website, whfr.fm, but in this case, you have to click on Forum. Because that's the Tuesday 1 to 2 segment. We call that the Forum Hour each week. And HSCC Connection, 10/13. That was the date they did it. So click on 10/13. You can listen to the first episode of HSCC Campus Connection right there from our website. And we're going to do that every month, we hope, on the first Tuesday from 1 to 2. And you can always catch it on the website after that date.
Second Tuesday.
I said first. Second Tuesday, yes.
And we're already. People have already emailed with ideas, some of the things that that they think should be included in the show, which I think is wonderful, and that's where we are very much open to it.
Yeah, it's, ideas. And it's not just you and Lindsay reading the news or the press releases, which the college does write up, and we have, but it's, you're talking about your personal spin and insights on them, and sometimes even your involvement with them if they're ongoing, and that's what I like. That's what I think is so fresh and unique. It's the human and the student's spin on things that are of matter to the community about Henry Ford Community College, so I want to commend you with that effort, and maybe we'll get Amy involved sometime in the future too. Tell us about yourself, Amy. I mean, you're hoping to graduate from staff training, and it's just I haven't graded your.
He just hangs that over.
I haven't graded your final exam.
He still hasn't graded.
That's right.
Mine.
I've got my fingers crossed and my toes crossed that I pass the staff training, and then I can. Okay. I can speak for longer than 20 seconds.
So that's right.
I
think I put her at the end of the hour, and there's at 19 seconds, 18 going. So thank you, Amy. I'm glad you could sit in and see how crazy we are in person here. Although anybody coming to the Student Center building, by all means, we have these big windows across from the cafeteria. You want to see at least the back of our heads as we're talking, and you can listen from the speaker above the window. Welcome to do that. We only have so much room in the studio, but always exciting here. Today, of course, we want to thank David Bazzi for coming in and telling us why you should vote for him. We do encourage you to listen to our future shows. We're still trying to line up a couple more interviews.
Two more.
We hope we're going to get them in before the election on November 3rd. So thank you for listening. Coming up next, and thank you, Dennis and Amy, very much for being here, of course, as usual. Coming up next is Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61. This is WHFR Dearborn. Making waves.
The longest highway that I know.